Hey everybody, welcome to Performance Anxiety. This episode was so much fun. I've been a big fan of Astronoid for a while. So when singer and guitarist Brett Boland said he was cool with coming on the show, I was pumped. It turns out we're practically the same person. Only Brett can sing, play guitar, bass, and drums, and I can't. Other than that though, same. We make up some new metaphors, talk about weird songwriting influences, and running away from your favorite bands. Pick up the music, follow them on social media at Astronoid, follow us at Performance ANX. Let's get right into the show with Brett Boland of Astronoid.
You're giving me option paralysis here.
I'm sorry. You're okay, creative. This is an engineering problem.
Oh, yeah. I didn't say I liked doing it. And I do it. All right. So what am I? All right. I'm going to take a crack at this.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm still rolling.
All right. All right. This is Brett Boland from Astronoid, and you're listening to Performance Anxiety.
That's it. That's all you got to do, man. That was perfect.
That was good, though.
That was. Brett, thank you so much for joining me, man. I've been listening to Astronoid for a while now. I've had Air for a little while, and I just got the new one. Digital copy, so because can't go out, but
got it.
But I want to know a little bit more about how you got started in music. Like, how old were you when you first started playing? Was guitar your first instrument?
It's exactly how you think. Probably, I started as a drummer. I just banged on pots and pans. And I used to take different bowls that were different sizes and like flip spoons around. This is like when I was like 4 or 5.
Okay.
Or like, I don't know. I was really young. The only reason why I remember this is because my parents had pictures and video of it.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's like one of those, like, I probably don't remember. It's photos and things that reinforce that. But like, I would bang on these pots and pans and like in pitch. And
oh,
then
nice.
I noticed that they were like higher and lower,
okay.
Stuff like that. But, and then I loved Elton John. He was like my favorite ever. Oh. And I would just like watch concert videos of my dad. He had this like live in London with like 10 billion people there. And I would watch that constantly and I would dress up like him. Like I had sunglasses and this like stupid hat, and I would just like do all that stuff, you know, just like pretend I was him. And my parents had this fake guitar that I would screw around with. And my grandmother bought me this like keyboard when I was a little older, and I'd screw around with that. And like, I don't know, all that like dumb kid stuff,
right.
Of just playing around and making noise. And then when I was older, I asked for a drum set, and my parents didn't think I was going to take it seriously. I don't know how. Looking back now and what I just said, I don't know how they thought I wasn't going to take it seriously. Now that I'm thinking about it, this is the first time I've thought about it. So they ordered me this like JCPenney catalog drum set.
Okay.
And I played the shit out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I ended up getting pretty good, and then I took lessons, and then here I am at 31, my 31, and I'm, you know, I have a degree, and it's like a performance / sound recording technology degree.
Oh, cool.
And the same time I got my drum set in school, I got a guitar as well. And I kind of like took a branching path. It was like drums was my serious instrument, and then I would screw around on guitar, and I taught myself how to play guitar.
Oh,
so
wow.
Guitar and drums were always parallel for me. And I think I took my knowledge of how to learn drums and applied that to guitar.
Okay.
But I've never taken a lesson or anything. I probably should, but,
I don't know. You seem to be doing pretty well without it.
I'm doing okay. Like James Hetfield is my teacher, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
Just learning the first four albums just or anything, but I just love it. I can't stop playing.
Yo,
so
that's good.
It's I just love music, and it's just something that I've always loved. And I just got a picture. My mom's like going through the closet right now at home, and I just got some pictures of me in those stupid outfits I was just telling you about. So very poignant time to ask that question.
Excellent. You know? Hey, I that's what I try to do. You didn't know I was actually contacting your mom ahead of time.
Oh, if and you we, bring the pictures out.
We planned the whole thing. We planned this whole thing. So
yeah.
When did singing enter the picture?
So I've always like sang in the car and stuff, but I did backup vocals in my college band with Casey.
Okay.
Of Astronoid. We've been in bands. No. Hold on a second. I sang in my high school band.
Okay.
There we go. I sang in the high school band with Casey. He was the guitar player, and I played guitar as well.
Was this the Hetfield and Hetfield?
Weird. No, this was this like
four. Okay.
We were like NoFX and Metallica. It was like, we were called Thanks for Nothing. It was a shitty punk band with breakdowns, and it was awesome. Like we would have the songs would be like really like NoFX type skate punk, pop punky. And then it would have like At the Gates guitar minis.
Oh my God.
And stuff. So we would like really screw around. And I have a video of our Battle of the Bands. We would like pretty much won every year. It was pretty funny, actually. Awesome. So I started singing in that. And then I started drumming more in college. Obviously, I was doing performance kind of. And I say kind of because it's a sound recording major and there was a performance major separate. So I don't have a performance degree, but I had to take two lessons a week. I had to do like all the stuff. You had to play an instrument to be in the program.
So
I just want to clarify and be, you know, I don't want to take credit for a degree I don't have.
Right.
But
I would love to do that.
It was cool because I felt like learning the technical aspect of production and signal flow and the math and physics behind everything. That kind of set me up for later, where I now have a job that I can make money rather than, you know, just playing, which I thought like at the time I thought would be cool. I was like, yeah, I can just play and make money, but that's a lot harder. And I'm glad that I kind of had the foresight and my parents kind of helped me out with that.
Yeah. That whole starving artist thing sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not fun.
No.
And, so, but you got to work really hard to, you're basically funding your passion, like with whatever you do. So, but anyways, you asked me about singing. So I pretty much what happened was I was writing these songs for Astronoid and I was just screwing around, like in my dorm room.
Okay.
And the first EP, I had like two songs and Dan was doing a recording project. We met at school and we were both in the same program. So I was like, dude, you don't need to get a band together because it sucks getting a band together to come record. Like, I'll just do it and I'll play everything and we can do it whenever the hell you want, which is like a dream for anyone at school because you have to herd cats, you know, getting these bands together. So I was like, I got two songs. I can play everything. And that's it. You know, it'll be easy. So we did those two songs. That's what turned out to be the Astronoid November EP. And then it just kind of, I put it online and it just went out. So I was like accidentally forced to sing.
Right.
So. But it, like, I'm really happy it happened because it's at first I really didn't love it, and it's pretty much when Air came out and we started touring a lot. I was like, man, this is hard. You know, it's like I'm used to playing drums in bands and guitar and not having to sing and not having that. Like, I'm not a front man. Like I go up and I like shrivel up
Oh, no.
and I get all nervous. I don't want to say anything. And
well, it's a good thing you have Casey, because he's not a shrinking violet at all.
No, he's a nut. He's a nut. We've been friends since like fourth grade. So we've been friends forever, and he's awesome. always been, he has such good, like, he has such a great personality and such good presence. I've wanted to give him a mic.
Yeah.
And just, dude, you know what? You do the banter and I'll just sing. But like, I think that'll be a little weird.
I think it would be amazing. I think it would be great.
It would be funny. But the thing is, usually we have like a half an hour unless we're like doing a headline run, and it would, like, it's just like set a mood for 30 minutes.
And yeah.
Like, I don't want to go up there and be like, "What's up?"
Yeah.
You know,
Cleveland.
We're going to play this really deep emotional song now.
Yeah.
See you on the other side, and or what, I don't know. But
I can see it. Yeah.
It's fun. I like creating that mood, and I like, so like when a band does it right and they come up and they say nothing and leave, it's just like, "Oh shit."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love when bands can pull that off, and I try to pull that off.
It's definitely an atmosphere. You know, it's almost a bit of a mystery.
That's kind of where I'm at. Sorry, I'm just taking a sip of a beverage.
That's okay. I've had worse. I've had Jerry Gaskill piss, and I've had Mark Lanegan eating yogurt. So I'm.
Oh, okay. Yogurt. Yeah. Oh. Yogurt sounds into a microphone.
Yes,
this is what I want to hear
from Mark Lanegan. That's something different, right there.
Yeah.
The deepest yogurt you've ever heard.
It's
baritone yogurt.
I'm gonna go get it.
Yeah. I've got a question for you. I want to know a little bit about the name. How did you guys come up with the name Astronoid?
So the name is literally me mispronouncing or screwing up asteroid or astronaut. It's either one. I don't know which one I was trying to say. It's more likely asteroid, because at the time Mass Effect 3 had just come out, and Dan and I were really into it, and we were talking about it while, like, just, I remember we were in like the back hallway at UMass Lowell, like where, like outside of the senior studio, and we were talking about game, and I missaid it, and that was it. And we both had a really good laugh. We're like, "We should name that band that." And we're like, "Yeah, that's funny." And then now look at it. now we have two albums, and we're stuck with it. I do like it though.
I think
it's original.
It is. It's fantastic. It's memorable, because you're like, Astronoid. What the hell is that?
Yeah, and people can't say it at first, and
yeah,
but it is memorable, and I do, it gets the feeling of the band perfect.
It really does. It really does, because the music is very, I don't want to say spacey, because it's not like space rock, like a failure or anything like that, but it is comet like, asteroid like.
It's like cause it's, I don't know. Yeah. I can't describe it either.
And you're making
it. Yeah. I don't know. It's very ethereal and very, like, I don't know. It's more of a vision of space that I think that we can go with rather than like, it's very, I like to think our music is beautiful, but
I love it, man.
It's like if you're looking at space, not like what space is, but if you're looking at it, that's how I feel
I'm. So how is Astronoid different from Hetfield and Hetfield? Because I believe it's like 3/4 of the same band, but I think you're all playing different instruments from one band to another.
Yeah, we did it. We did the shuffle.
Yeah.
Except for Dan. Dan played bass in both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he kind of got screwed. He got he was like, we needed a bass player in that. Yeah. But he's very good, and he's taking it very seriously, and he does a really, really good job with his parts.
Oh,
and
to keep up with you guys, yeah.
He's awesome. Yeah, he's such an incredible musician. He's a classical guitar player, trained, and he just moves to bass, and it's just like, oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, man.
Of course you do.
That's that's a talented guy right there.
Yeah, he's very good at recording synths.
And you know, that's a guy who loves your music, too, because, you know, to move from guitar to a supporting role like bass, to get into the groove and be the backbone of the band and not right up out front, is just that's dedication.
Yeah, and he like loves not being up front, so it's the perfect instrument. It's the perfect. If he could sit in the green room while we played, you would. So
that's a perfect basis right there.
Yeah, it worked out for him. And what's also funny is no one would realize he wasn't there. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
Bass is like the most important instrument. I just need to cover my ass there.
There you go.
Because bass players don't get enough credit, and people like Dan Briggs and like the real dudes out there who really take it seriously takes that music to the next level. So I hate when bands put out an album and I'm like, oh, they didn't have a bass player. It's just like the guitarist is playing bass. Like, it's like, come on, man, take the bass seriously.
Exactly. You know, because it's one of the foundations of every song.
It's the link between the rhythm and the like harmonic structure of the song. You need that bridge.
Yep.
It's so important. But anyways, I totally forgot what you asked me.
I did too. So I think it was, I was just wondering how Hetfield and Hetfield was different from Asteroid, since it's mostly the same guys.
Yeah. So Casey did a lot of the writing for Hetfield and Hetfield because I played drums. So what we would do is we would get in the garage together at my parents' house and then just like write 4 songs in a day of just absolute just chaos. The easiest way to put it, it was like Coheed and Cambria, Fall of Troy, Dillinger Escape Plan. So it was like all that, and it was really fast, and it was really chaotic, and our kind of mantra was to play as fast as we can, and to play as complicated as we could. just like really pushing ourselves musically.
Okay.
And then that was like our band in college, and then towards the end in senior year, I was like, I need to write something that is the complete opposite of what I'm doing. And I'm going to make simplicity the cornerstone.
Right.
And then that's what those 2 songs came from for Astronaut. So it was sort of like the complete antithesis of Hetfield and Hetfield.
Okay. And now I know there's something behind the name Hetfield and Hetfield.
So we both wanted to be James Hetfield. Casey moved to Seattle right after high school to help out with his family.
Okay.
And so he moved there, and then we kind of had a falling out, and then we reconnected, and then we started sending ideas back and forth over the internet.
Okay.
Of songs. And we were like, I'm going to buy a white Explorer and I'm going to be James Hetfield. And he's like, no, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to be James Hetfield. And it's like, well, we're both going to be James Hetfield. Hence, Hetfield and Hetfield. And the joke's on him because I'm the one with the white Explorer. So now he can never get one.
So you won. And it's a beautiful guitar because I've seen you play it.
Thank you. Yes. I'm looking at it right now.
I've always loved the Explorer.
I was playing it earlier today. And It needs a little love. I don't think I've changed my strings since the Coheed tour. I didn't bring it to Europe. So November. Oh boy. But I've been playing my 7 string a lot. I don't know why.
Okay, so what brought on the desire to play a 7 string?
I've had one since the beginning. It's on every album, but
okay.
I don't like to use it. I don't like to use the open A. I tune it, drop A. Okay. I don't like to use that as like a tonic, like a main note.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use the low end as like right when you think it couldn't go lower, it does. Like, okay. I like that. I like to have the extended range lower rather than higher, for like chords. 'Cause it's a different feeling when you go to like a higher octave chord, when you go to that lower octave, and it's just like, oh, it like kind of pulls out a little more, a little heavier. And I like playing with that. And, just recently, you know, I've got a lot of spare time, so yeah. I've been writing and, I've just been really enjoying that instrument. And, I'm not very familiar with it, so I'm getting a lot better at, taking advantage of the extended range of the guitar. And it's fun. Like, it's cool. It's like, throwing a new paintbrush, you know, or something new into your work. That metaphor made no sense, but you know what I mean.
But you know what?
Another paintbrush in your toolbox.
Yeah, there you know? Go. I like that. You know what? I like that one. I'm going to use that, and nobody's going to understand it unless they listen to this podcast.
No, it's fine.
But is it hard to switch back and forth, you know, thinking the mindset of six string and then using the seven string? Did it?
Yeah,
I don't even know where I'm going with
it. It was at first, but once you realize that it's a six string guitar in standard with a low B or an A at the end. So it's like, just pretend that string's not there and you have a standard tuned guitar.
Okay.
That's and then you can, you know, figure it out from there. So I've actually been, to get better at it, I've been playing and practicing songs that I know in standard and just ignoring that string just to get better at muting it and playing cleaner and just sort of pretending it's not there, because it is just a mental barrier.
Okay.
Of just like, you know, it's the same thing as my Les Paul. It's just, it's got an extra thing in the way.
Yeah.
So, and then figure out how you can use that and be like, oh, instead of going up here, you know, to this A, I can hit the low A or hit this low C, and that I couldn't hit on the Les Paul. So I don't know. It's fun. And we're in drop C anyways for Astronaut. So it's also a different tuning to screw around with. So it's fun. I don't know. I just like throwing hurdles at myself. I guess.
Well, then you overcome them and then you feel good about yourself. So.
Yeah. Not today. I did a lot of practicing today.
And, yeah.
I felt pretty good.
You doing a lot of writing in the downtime now?
Yeah. Yep. Just sort of whatever comes out.
Now you're writing more. Is Astronaut the main focus of your writing now? Or is it?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, it always kind of is. I've been writing since the last album came out.
Okay.
But, it's sort of come to a little more of a head because I feel like I'm making some headway in, you know, what I want it to sound like. Because I don't know what I want it to sound like. All I know is I don't want it to be the same. So,
you know, in looking at the bands that influence you guys, I can definitely see that type of influence of ever-changing sounds. I mean, because I found the band on Bandcamp when I was searching Devin Townsend sounding stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hear that Devin Townsend, Emperor, Alcest, Mew kind of influences in you know, and each one is influences in a different thing. Like the vocals, I hear a lot of Mew. In the actual music, I hear a mix of like Devin Townsend and Emperor. You guys do those amazing pinch harmonics. I absolutely love that stuff.
Thanks. We do too, and we take it a little too far.
You can't. Don't ever say that, because you can't.
It's fun though. We have like little contests on stage. Like, we'll stare at each other and just like, when we're practicing, it'll get to a point where every note we're playing is pinch harmonic and just staring at each other while we're doing it. It's fun.
That's awesome.
A fun
That's one of the things I loved about that style of metal with like Emperor, and I just love the real heavy guitar, and then in the middle of it, they'll just crazy ass pinch harmonics all over the place.
Oh yeah, that's what I was practicing today. I was learning "Curse You All Men" and Izan solo stuff.
Okay.
I love Izan. I absolutely think he's a genius.
Yeah.
I think he's underrated. Like Devin, he's the Nordic Devin Townsend.
You know what? I haven't listened to much of the solo, solo stuff. I have to check that out. And I'm very familiar with Devin.
It's really good. It's not the same, but it is, it's the same as like, he does whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I want. So every album is different. Every album is just like, you know, I'm going to try this. There's more experimental ones and there's more black metal ones. And there's one that is just like absolutely off the wall that I can't even pronounce.
Oh, yeah.
it is, his new EP is really good. Like I just love him. He's such a good guitar player. And like on half the records, Lepros is his backing band. So it's like, it's killer. Like it's great stuff. And
that is awesome. Yeah. I would definitely have to check it out. And have you been following Devin during the whole quarantine thing?
I haven't.
He's been putting out a song like every day.
I've completely taken myself off social media.
Oh really?
Just to like, I haven't deleted anything, but like nothing is on my phone. No. It's not a very mentally healthy place
now. No,
even with the good stuff like Devin Townsend, but and like people making music and making stuff, it's just unfortunately it's too toxic right now, really, and I don't need that.
And especially what like Twitter seems to be the worst.
Oh, that was the first one to go.
Yeah, good. If I didn't have to promote this show through Twitter, I wouldn't even have it. But I'm a more of a visual guy. I was a photographer for since the early 90s, and I tend to like Instagram more because it's a more visual.
Yeah. I agree. So. I actually, that's the only one I still have on because you can't really post a lot of negative stuff unless you're like taking pictures of or like reposting stuff. Like I'm still seeing like people's dogs and you know, it's which is fine. That's like what I want to see. Good. I want to see Instagram is more normal, and I don't really feel like I have anything to post. So I've just been posting what I've been listening to like every day. I'm just listening to a ton of music. So I'm like, here, I don't know. Maybe someone who follows me, one of the four people will find something new because I always like finding new music.
So do I. And it's, like I said, that's one of the ways I found you was because I love Devin Townsend and he hadn't put anything out in a little bit. And I was like, let me find something that he's influenced. And so I believe the first thing that popped up was Astronoid. So, and I saw that.
Yeah, we kind of wear that on our sleeve.
Well, I noticed two things in particular. The first one I want to ask you about is that you guys did a cover of My Bloody Valentine's Only Shallow. That there's only two bands that I've known that have ever done that song any justice, and it's you and a band called Shiner. How did you guys decide to do a cover of that song? That song is so intense.
That was when it was still just me.
Oh,
pretty
really?
Much.
Okay.
Yeah, and because I didn't put the band together until Stargazer, so that was a little before Stargazer. And it was almost an experiment to myself to see if I could do it.
Oh, wow.
And like, I've read some stuff about how it's like, oh, it sounds like the original. It's just like, yeah, but you know how hard it is to make it sound like the original?
Yeah.
That was the experiment. It was like, can I get that sound, like that warbly, weird, and still I kind of make it my own, but I really wanted to make it kind of true to the original.
Well, that's one song where I'm all for bands taking a song and covering it and making it their own. That's one of the few that I think if you can't.
I also, I was told about them after I started the band. So, I didn't know about shoegaze.
Oh my God. Seriously?
So What happened was, as I put it out and then people were like, oh, this is great. You guys sound like this, this and that and this. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
What is this? Like, they were like, you sound like My Bloody Valentine. You sound like Slow Dive. You sound like,
Moose.
Lush, like all these Ride. And I was like, what is this? And then I just got introduced to shoegaze and I had never heard shoegaze before.
That's insane.
And, and I was just like, I kind of gave myself like a little pat on the back. I was like, Brett, you kind of like did this without hearing anything of the source material.
You deserve
and I was like,
it,
cool.
Man.
But like, I was also influenced by Yaesu and Alcest, who were influenced by them. So it all comes back. But so I was like obsessed with that song. And I was like, cool, like I love this song and I'm going to cover it. And then later, as I go through time, I'm like, this is like an untouchable song that I managed to touch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was just like, maybe I wouldn't have done that if I were where I was now. Like, I wouldn't touch that song.
I was naive.
I wasn't privy to how important that song and album was. But I remember I did read about it. It's in the Rolling Stone albums to listen to before you die, or however many hundred. But that was at a recording studio that I was interning at. And I remember writing that one down because I was like, oh, because you read the story and how much money they spent.
Oh, my God. And, dude, I'm still trying to get Alan McGee on the show just to talk about My Bloody Valentine bankrupting him.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's one of the most expensive. Well, it was one of the most expensive for the time.
And, yeah.
I don't even think it sounds very good, but I wouldn't want it any other way.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
But it doesn't sound good.
No. And the weird thing is, even the follow up, 14 years later?
Yeah.
20 years. That doesn't sound good either, but I love MBV. It sounds exactly like Loveless.
Did that come out the year Air came out?
It might have. I don't remember.
Because I remember I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I was like, no, they can't put out an album.
Damn it, Shields.
I don't remember. Yeah, it's not on Spotify.
No,
that's a weird record. It's hard to find. They didn't make many.
No, I know.
I did manage to get a copy, and it pissed me off because it doesn't fit my CD rack because it's a little too long because they wanted to be fancy.
Oh, my God. I only got the download because I have three teenagers, so I'm constantly broke. So I just downloaded it, but I'm one of those guys, I need physical copies. So even if I get the download, I'll eventually have to get the original copy. So I'm still working on that.
I used to go every Tuesday, when it was still Tuesday.
Yeah.
I would go to the record store and just check out what was new and pick up a bunch of stuff. We'd go every week and for years. And we both have like 2,000 plus CD collections.
Yeah, I've got almost 4,000 at this point. It's just.
Yeah. So, but I've, with Spotify, I've been going down, but I still buy like whatever. I'm like really, really digging. Especially with what's going on now, I saw a bunch of bands like cancel tours and I just bought a bunch of merch from their store. Bunch of CDs and t-shirts and stuff like that. So
yeah, I'm trying to do the same as much as I can.
Yeah, no, it's tough because I want people to buy our stuff too.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But we didn't have tours canceled. And I know
you're trying to support other people, but you also need other people to support you.
Right. But at the same time, it's like, I didn't have to let crew down, or I didn't have to, you know. So it's like, we just have whatever the operating costs of Astronaut are that are just normal, you know. Yeah, so it's like, we're fine there. But
I'll tell you, the worst part about that whole thing is that I don't shoot really professionally anymore. I haven't done it since my wife and I had kids, but I do shoot for a DC area blog that does live music reviews. And I was literally 2 or 3 days away from shooting Devin Townsend live at Ram's Head when everything went down. So I had the media pass. I was all set to go. And like 2 days before the show, everything's canceled.
Yep.
And I haven't seen Devin live in person yet.
I've only seen him once, and it was at my least favorite venue.
Oh, really?
And he was amazing. He was great. But I was just like, it wasn't right. I still haven't had the right Devin Townsend experience. one day. But we've never played with him. I've never been anywhere with him there. Like, no festivals or anything. So,
oh man,
one day the stars will align. Yeah.
I was hoping so too, because I've actually had a couple people from his bands on the show, Shay Ami Dorval. She's been on the show, and
she's unbelievable.
Oh, I love her. She's so
what a awesome voice.
I know.
Holy shit! Casualty of the Fool is one of my favorite.
Yes. Oh my! And now Shay's doing an EP of covers through, I think, GoFundMe or something. So
her album is good. It's very good. Oh, her solo album.
Yeah. All right. So I'll tell you, I found out about Shay through Devin Townsend. You know, he had her on his Key album on a song called Train Fire. And I was like, who is this? And it just says Shay on the album. That doesn't help me very much. And then I saw the Casualties of Cool album come out, and her actual name was there. I'm like, oh, cool. All right. So now I'm going to go look and see what she's got, because this is how I have 4,000 CDs.
Mm-hmm. So no, you're doing the same thing I do.
So I looked on Amazon, and it had one album up there, and I looked on YouTube to listen to some of the music, and it had that album and an EP, but Amazon only had her one album listed up there, and it was like $45, and it was in like a double special edition. It was just her album.
Yeah,
so I was like, damn, I can't do that. So I found her website, and I just shot her a message. I said, hey, I'm just wondering if you sell this directly, because I was looking on Amazon, and it's $45. And, you know, I like your voice, but I can't afford that.
Honestly, and that doesn't go to her.
Yeah, exactly.
She's not charging that.
So she's like, oh, Jesus. She's like, Amazon, bunch of assholes. She's like, I'll just mail it to you. I'm like, well, okay, so what do you want me to send you? She's like, nothing. I'll just mail it to you. I was like, are you serious? She's like, yeah, no problem. So like a week or two later, I get in the mail this envelope from Che, and it's got that album plus the EP that wasn't listed anywhere, and she signed them both. One was, it was around Christmas time, so one says, Merry Christmas, Che, and the other one says, You're the tits, Che. So I was like, this is, so it was a little while after that I decided to start doing this podcast. I'm like, I got to have Che on. She's got to be one of my first people. And fortunately, she agreed to come on, and we chat every once in a while ever since. And I also had Mike St. John on not too long ago.
He's such a good dude.
Yeah.
We've done so many tours together with him behind the lights.
That's awesome.
He's done stuff for Tesseract.
Yes.
And he's a great guy. He helped me out because I program all the lights for the Astronaut stuff. And
cool.
He was very helpful with you know, he's like, dude, the lights are off. I was like, what? He helped me find a Reaper thing that was happening. I use Reaper to program the lights, and
really? Is that like the audio editing software too?
Yeah. Yep.
I've been playing around with that, cuz I don't use that to edit. But
it's amazing.
I have a copy of it. I didn't realize you could do lights through that too.
So I do. It's this program that you track MIDI, and then the MIDI program, like, it shoots out DMX.
Okay.
So it triggers a preset pretty much.
Oh, okay.
It's cool. It's a square peg round hole.
Yeah.
Type thing. You're like kind of you're playing with, you know, things you shouldn't be, you know, it's like gene splicing, but it works not, but it's a lot of work, but he helped me a lot with that. And, actually the guy, the LD of, Cody and Cambria was a really big help too.
He was, cool.
He was a lot of help. So,
that's awesome.
That's always cool. But, I forget what we were talking about again.
We were just I do have a
question.
Okay.
Brain.
We were talking about the My Bloody Valentine cover. So I did want to know if you guys do any other covers.
I do covers by myself, but I don't release them.
Oh man. See, now that's something you should probably consider doing with all this downtime now.
No, I know. I was the thing is, I'm like, I have this idea and I'm like, okay, this would be really cool. And then I start it and then I'm like halfway through it, like a demo of it. I'm like, this sucks. And it usually is like not at all how I thought it was going to be. Like in my head, I was like, this is going to sound cool. It's going to be like a little different. And then it just sounds stupid and cheesy. And I'm like, that's it. Done. And then it's gone. There's one cover that I want to do, though.
What's that?
Two covers I want to do. The number one cover I want to do is San Jacinto.
Oh, I knew it. I knew you were a big fan of Peter Gabriel, and I was kind of hoping that would be the one.
That's the one. It has to happen.
Yes.
It is. I've started it, and it is not easy because I can't do it. There's that marimba line in the beginning.
Yes.
Like that, and it's a permutation, and it's like a few different marimbas overlaid, and okay. I haven't transposed it or transcribed it yet. I just can't, it's really strange, and I can't like sit there because it's not locked to a grid. Like, you know, I can't just put it into Pro Tools and just be like, oh yeah, this is definitely 150 tempo.
Right.
You know, it's like, I haven't found a good way to really do it. I would need to sit down and actually write it out.
Is
and
that
I haven't
the stuff that was sampled that he did, or is that a live track?
I'm pretty sure those are live marimbas.
Okay. Because I've been contacting his drummer from that whole era, Jerry Murata. I'm trying to get him on.
That'd be incredible.
So, yeah. So he's told me, he's like, yeah, I'll come on, no problem. But we just haven't, for literally a year, we haven't been able to nail down a date.
So, well, now's your time. You got to reach out to him now. Hey, man, I know you're not doing anything.
he plays with the Security Project, which is like it's a Peter Gabriel cover band, but with like him and Trey Gunn from King Crimson and a whole bunch of other people. So
that's nuts.
Trey Gunn was on too. So,
that's the other cover I want to do is what the hell's the name of that song? Off Discipline.
Elephant Talk.
No, Frame by Frame.
Frame by Frame.
We could do it, but it would have to be a group effort.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So we would have to really figure that out. And I actually started that one as well, but that Fripp guitar part is not possible. How he does it, I cannot play it. And I've tried, and his fingers, Fripp is the guitar player, right? Am I wrong there? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's for that, it was Fripp and Adrian Belew.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is Fripp's part. He just sits there on his stool.
Yes.
And just makes everyone look like a fool.
He does.
I hate that rhymes. Man.
Well, that's lyrics to a new Astronaut song.
Yeah, there we
about
go.
About Robert Fripp.
Yeah, Frame by Frame. I would love to cover those songs. I would love to do it.
Oh, man. I'd love to hear an Astronaut version of both of those.
I think it would be a lot of, especially San Jacinto. It is like the most epic, emotional. It is such a great song.
And
I love that whole record. That's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, it took me a while to get into Peter Gabriel, because when that stuff came out, I was more into Megadeth. So,
yeah, I could see how, you know, doesn't really. Yeah, I got into Metallica and Megadeth when I was a kid, and I got into Peter Gabriel like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So it's like I've had time Yeah. You know, it's not like they're both coming out at the same time. And I'm like, what? But I am listening to Devourment and Mew at the same time. So it's like, who knows?
Mew's awesome. Oh, gosh.
They're the best. I was doing a deep dive on them the other day. Like, I don't know. I just do it every once in a while. They have like no videos.
Yeah.
Like of like they have music videos and some live stuff, but like there's nothing besides their like documentary that they made at the Glass Handed Kites.
Oh, really? I haven't gone that deep yet.
Yeah, it's that documentary is unbelievable. It's awesome.
I did see they did a really cool set at KEXP.
Yeah,
I think that's on YouTube. That was pretty interesting.
No, they're one of the best live bands. Like Jonas goes up there and he's just like, I'm not even gonna look like I'm trying.
Yeah,
and crush these notes.
Yeah,
and yeah, they're my favorite band. They're like the one band that since the beginning of Astronoid has been like an influence. Other bands come in and out.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever I'm listening to. But Mew is always like a constant of like the, I just want that feeling. I want to capture that feeling. And he's such a diverse vocalist. And with his patterns, he never sings what you think he's going to. And even in verses that repeat, his vocals aren't the same. And choruses with changed lyrics, you know, it's just so creative. And it's, I try to strive for that and pull out somewhat, well, you know, what he's doing into my music. And it's hard because I don't want to copy him, but
I
will.
I don't want to, but I
don't
want to, will.
But he doesn't make it hard. You know, he doesn't make it easy not to. They're a great band. I was listening to the live with the Copenhagen Orchestra. I listened to the whole thing last night. I've listened to it a bunch already, but I just, from front to back, I was just sitting there, you know, just really doing nothing, taking it all in. It's great.
I'm going to have to check that out, because that's one band that I like. I haven't done a deep dive, and I think that even my wife could get involved, get into them. So I think that's one I could do a deep dive, and she'd actually be cool with.
Yeah, the Glass Handed Kites and No More Stories are the two records, and they're for me. I love them all, but...
So I have a question. Since we're kind of talking about recording now, was there much of a difference in how you recorded the Astronoid, the new album, compared to Air?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Air was a nightmare.
Oh, really?
Because we were like writing it and recording it at the same time.
Oh, jeez.
Like, up until like the very end, we were changing forms.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was crazy. Like the drums were done and I was still writing parts and I didn't have the vocals done. It wasn't like we were just by ourselves. Like we didn't have a label. We didn't have management. We didn't have anything. So it was just like, we worked on it when we had time and I was like, these vocals suck. I got to rewrite them. Like, you know, and like there's a early version of Resin and it is horrible. Like it is, you know, and same with Up and Atom. Like there's an early version of Up and Atom where the vocals are completely different, like completely different melody, different lyrics. And it's just like, it's just wrong. Like if you heard it, you'd be like, oh, this is the worst thing ever.
Oh no.
I bet now it would be interesting. To me, I don't think it's interesting, but I know how I like other bands when they put out like alternate versions, I would like it, but.
Oh yeah. That's why I buy the deluxe versions of everything.
Yeah, I love that stuff. I love it. Even though I'm like, wow, I'm never going to listen to that again. I'm glad I heard it.
Yeah, I'm glad I have it. But
it was actually a huge turning point. Not a turning point, but anyways, there's a Third Eye Blind album, their first album.
Yes.
The one with Semi-Charmed Life.
Yes.
So the story of that is they put that song in, and the record company told him there's no way this song is like gonna make the record. This sucks. Yeah. And we all know that's like the single, like the one. So I always heard, I heard that story before, and I was like, wow, like I it's crazy. Like that, the disconnect between a record company and the band. Yeah. And then I heard they put out the 20 year anniversary and the demo is on there, and it is 3 BPM slower, like really minute, like change, slower. It sounds horrible.
Really?
Like it is completely different. It like the whole vibe is off. Like everything is wrong. And if I heard that, I would have been like, no way this is going to be on the record. And I was driving up to Maine with my wife, and I had just written Water a few days before.
Okay.
And we were listening to the demo, and something, it was just, there was something not right with that song. I loved it, but like there was something not right. And then we were talking about this Semi-Charmed Life thing, and the deluxe edition had just come out, and we're listening to it, and I'm like, you know, maybe I should speed Water up like 3 BPM. Like, and I did. I went home from that trip from Maine, and I sped it up, and I was like, this is it. And I sent it to everybody in the band, and they're like, what did you do? Like, this is so much better. And I was like, I just sped it up like 3 BPM.
Oh my God.
And it changed the whole thing. So it's like, it's funny how those little alternate versions of songs can spring ideas for yourself and be like, well, if it made that song better, it'll definitely make mine better. So if it worked for them, work for me.
Yeah,
so
why not? That was,
but with the difference between Air and self-titled is like that example right there is the difference. Like I wrote demos and I fully flushed out demos. Like I recorded the album before it was recorded.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I did everything. So everything was done. Vocals were done. Lyrics were done. Everything was done. Then we recorded like big boys, you know? So, and we had much more control of the situation at this point.
Really? Even because compared to doing it the first one yourself?
Well, it was still ourselves. It's just like we were putting an album out now and it meant something. Like it was, like it had to be good.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Air didn't have to be good. There were no eyes on us.
That's true.
You know, as many eyes as, you know, we're not the biggest band in the world, but a follow-up to an album that did pretty well, you know, it's like, it was a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And we wanted to get it right. We wanted to take our time. And yeah, so we just took our time and I developed the process of, you know, recording these demos and really just flushing them out. And I would have, when I write songs, I'll do everything at once. So I'm like literally jumping around my room, my studio, from guitar to bass to drums to guitar to bass to vocals. And I'm just kind of building this song throughout the night.
Oh,
and I love doing it because I'm a drummer first. And like writing the drums is so important to me. Because of like it's a direct correlation to the feeling of the song, and it can directly support the melodic structure. Like you can have a drum part that is just it could just not sound right, you know, and not carry that emotional weight. It's like the every instrument has to serve the song. Like it's not about each part, it's about the grand scheme, it's about the grand piece. So everything has to fit together to serve the music.
So
if that makes sense.
With the self-titled album, with everything that needs to serve the song, is there any type of overarching theme to the album?
Pretty much what I was talking about, just like the pressure of Right. You know, that's a lot of it. Honestly, okay. I was just like so taken over by trying to one up myself. And I didn't want that to like I, when I first started writing for the album, it was like the songs were faster and they were more complicated and more technical. And I was like trying to outdo Air. And then it wasn't till I realized that it's not about outdoing, it's about moving on from Air and then right. creating something new of like where I'm at now. I think some people are like, oh, like this doesn't sound like Air, so it's, you know, not good. But I feel like if I actually did put out an album that sounded like Air, no one would have liked it rather than having the vocal minority yell at me, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I think we made the right choice for the band. I absolutely think we made the right choice for the band. I love the songs and I love the album. And it's a time capsule, you know?
Yeah.
It's that moment from where Air picked up, we all quit our jobs, jumped in a van, toured, Dan got married, I got married soon after that, like all of these life changes all in this time. So it was just like, yeah, you grow as people and so does the music. And that's kind of why Asteroid songs just don't fall out of the sky, is because it's so emotionally driven and just driven by my life and my experiences. And it's like I got to kind of be in the mood for that song. It's almost like right. I'm like opening the door into myself and letting everyone in to just yell at me on YouTube. So it's like, that's what I'm doing. And I just got to be ready, you know? So,
I like the self-titled album a lot. It definitely sounds like a progression from Air, which I like, because like you said, you know, there's no point in recording Air Part 2.
No, it wouldn't have been as good. And it, like, you already have Air.
Exactly.
Go listen to Air. You know, it's like, I don't want Metallica to do Master of Puppets 2.
Yeah. Like, well, they already did King that with Diamond, Unforgiven. And
King Diamond did Abigail 2.
Yeah.
Like, we all know how that turned out.
Yeah.
So Abigail 1 is still there and still good. So, we just kind of moved on. And once I started hitting that stride for the self-titled album, it felt natural and it felt good. You know, yeah. I really, really love those songs. And I thought we did some really cool things, and I think we nailed some stuff and some stuff, maybe not so much. Like, we took some chances with that record. There's no blast beats on it.
Right.
I
yeah.
thought that was a chance, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that was important for us because that would have been a crutch.
Yeah. Well,
but I would have put one in if it served the song.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Okay.
But I felt like it didn't.
I really love songs like Beyond the Scope. I mean, that definitely sounds like a big progression from Air to the self-titled album. I don't see that. That wouldn't have fit on something like Air. So I really do like the progression.
I love that. That's probably my favorite song on the record.
Oh,
I don't
yeah?
know if people agree with me. But
it's mine.
I love that song. Was like the one that I fought for
oh, yeah?
the most. It was just like I thought it was such a cool, different, uplifting song.
Yeah.
And it was written like, I really like that, the image I get in my head with that song, because it's like, it was right when I was watching Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah.
And, like, there was a part of the show that like really influenced the lyrics.
Oh, really?
Like, in my head I'm thinking about whatever her name is, the queen.
Cersei.
Just looking down. Yeah. It's like pretty much in my head, the point of view in that song is like from Cersei just looking down on everybody. And just like,
oh, cool.
You guys are nothing. It's just like, you know, and it's like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. You die. Whatever. You know, I don't know. And then, so it's like, I don't know. I think that was fun because I don't usually write like that. So okay. There's a lot of weird shit on self-titled that like I don't usually write. I don't usually write about true things that happen to me, like with I Wish I Was There When the Sun Set. Like I don't usually do that stuff. I don't usually write like that. So it was fun. It was some cool stuff. Maybe some things I'll never do again.
That song's been around a while though, hasn't it?
Yeah, I wrote that while I was mixing Air, but I had no vocals. So it was like, it was around for years and could not, another song with three different vocal versions, you know, of just like, just doesn't, nothing clicked until that happened.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you how it happened. Oh, no, I can't tell you how it happened. I just picked up my guitar and I played along with the song and I stood up like I was at a concert and I was like, what would I sing that would feel comfortable being in front of this many people?
Okay.
I'm just like, that doesn't sound lame. You know what I mean? It's just like what feels right and what feels natural. And then like I started developing that melody and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like I got to use these like tricks. I got to trick myself. I'm always like finding ways to trick myself in the thinking differently or tackling a problem. You know, I'm an engineer in my day job and I do freelance engineering work and broadcast. And it's just like, I guess it's that engineer mentality of like problem solving of just like critical thinking and just like, all right, how can I trick myself into writing this part or like making it? But it's fun. I don't know. It's not fun because I wish I just could write it the first time. But it is fun. I do love writing.
You guys toured a lot since Air came out. What are the best and worst experiences you've had? I mean, is there any like horror stories from the road, or do you get the chance to meet somebody that's like an idol? Anything like that happen?
So I can't say there have been like any real horror stories. Like we have the general horror stories of like we slept in the van in Arizona.
Ooh.
Like in the middle of the summer and you know, it was horrible. Right. Like we did shit like that all the time. And that's what every band does. And it's, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Though Tommy from Between the Buried and Me just posted this thing the other day. I forget what, I think it was CNN or like some, you know, media company put it out and it was like, LA band does whole tour in van. Like, no one had ever, like it was some impossible feat one has ever done. It's like, can you believe this band toured in a van the whole tour?
Oh my.
It's like, and I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. I was like, I can't. It's like, all
suffering
right.
For their art.
And then it said in the article, it said, but it's okay. They got hotel rooms.
Oh, well then.
So it's like, oh, okay. Oh. So they didn't actually do it.
No,
but no, every band we've gone out with has been incredible and they've been really great to us, like meeting the Tesseract guys, and like we've done three tours with them and that's been incredible. And a really big one for me was Between the Buried and Me. And when you meet people, like I've been listening to Between the Buried and Me since the first record, so I was the one waiting for them at their van. You know? So I was that guy at one point. I did run away. Like I never actually stayed. I did get too freaked out. Not freaked out, but like I was like,
Yeah.
So when I met them and they were all like really great guys, that always feels nice. Like when you meet your idols and then they're just really amazing people. And it was the same thing with Coheed and Cambria. Like they had no reason to be nice to us at all. Never mind. Incredible. You know, they were so welcoming and so nice. And everyone in that band, Josh, Zach, Claudio, Travis, they were, I couldn't believe how sweet they were. And it was incredible. And their whole crew was amazing. So like, that's the other thing is like, you got to, as a band, as an opener, like the number one thing for you to do is you got to make friends with the crew because you're not dealing with the band. Like, you have to make the crew like you.
Yeah.
You need to get off stage fast. You need to not spill your beer everywhere. And you need to not complain when you have nowhere to play. You know?
Yeah.
And if because it's not the band that's going to get pissed off. You're going to piss the crew off, who's going to tell the band, who's then going to tell them the next band never tour with Astronoid.
Yeah.
Because they can't get shit together. So it's like, so when there's a really great crew, like, that's awesome. And it makes things easier for everybody. And it's been really cool with all this. And I can't forget about the Ghost shows. Like, Ghost is my, like, new modern favorite band. Like, I think Tobias is an absolute genius.
Yeah.
He is everything. Marketing, he's got it all figured out.
Oh, no kidding.
His music is incredible. I don't care what you have to say. He can write a goddamn song.
Yeah. I'm a latecomer like to that as well. So, but I got to agree with you. His stuff is everywhere.
He's unbelievable. Like, I went to their first show in the U.S.
Oh, really?
And yeah, there was nobody there. It was, like, half full.
Wow.
And me and a couple buddies, and, you know, it was amazing. So I've seen them from the small club to the medium club all the way to headlining Exit 111, or, like, you know, close to it.
Yeah.
You know, they were right behind Def Leppard.
Wow.
So they've done fine.
Yeah.
You know, but it's incredible. And meeting Tobias and meeting the Ghouls and meeting their crew. The crew was a little stern.
Stern.
I've noticed a difference in seriousness as I go up the chain. You know, in terms of the bigger the band you get, the more serious the TM is, like the tour manager and their crew. And he was like all business, you know. So, but he was great. He was nice. He was very welcoming. We had two cases of Budweiser waiting for us.
Nice.
So, no complaints there. but, you know, just meeting Tobias was so great. Like, he was just like the nicest guy. All the guys in Ghost were really nice, and it's just we're so lucky that I feel like our music is positive, and it seems to be we're gravitating towards people that are that way. And same with our fans. Never met a fan that's an asshole. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Like, everyone like it's almost like we're just pulling people, like-minded people in, you know.
That so happens a lot. Yeah, you'll definitely find that.
Yeah, and we're lucky, and it's great. I can't complain.
Well, I've been throwing your music out to everybody I can. I've been posting it and sharing it with as many people as I can, because I absolutely loved Air. I love the self-titled album, so I'm trying to pull people in for you as well. So
thank you. Yeah, you know, it's getting out there. It's incredible. I can't believe, you know, if we were to hang it up right now, I'd be like, wow.
Well, don't do that, because
it's been a cool ride, but we're not.
Good, because I love it. My kids love your band, and even my wife. We were listening to it today. We had to run a couple errands since we found out my wife does not have COVID-19. So for the first time in 2 weeks, we've been able to leave the house. So we ran out a couple errands, and I said, "Let me listen to the new album again, just kind of get in the mood for talking to Brett and to put it on." And she was digging it the whole time. So you got five fans in this house.
Great. Yeah, it's a pretty a lot of people have told me that they can listen to it with their girlfriends or significant others around.
So yeah,
they put it on a lot in the car.
The thing that really really drives it home for me is that you get the music is fantastic, but the vocal harmonies are amazing, and you don't do I can only take like Cookie Monster growling and yelling for so long, and you guys don't do that. So
no, that's like the only constant. We will never do it.
Thank
and
you.
And I still couldn't say never, but it's like a 1% chance less that we would ever do it. Like, it is, it's not what we're trying to do. You know, I can't imagine screaming ever being an Astronoid. You know, it was in the first EP,
yeah,
and on Stargazer. But after Stargazer, I'm like, this is it. And the main reason is because I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't want to scream. I'm not good at it. And it's singing is hard enough. Like guys like Danny and Tommy between the Buried and Me, like I give them so much credit because I can barely hit the notes without going to a scream before it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I just, that was actually, I'm never going to do it.
Oh, good. That's it. I love the vocals the way they are. So that's good news for me. But I've kept you for quite a while tonight, man. I want to thank you so much for spending a good chunk of your evening with me, man. It's been a blast.
No problem. No, I've had fun. No, I've got nothing else to do.
Well, where can people find the albums? And so follow you on social media too.
We're on everything. You can get us on Spotify, the Google Play, Amazon, our web store. You can go to our website, astronoidband.com. And our social media is Astronoid. It's at Astronoid, I'm pretty sure, on everything.
A lot of Astronoids out there, so you...
Yeah. But I don't know how our management secured just the name, but that was cool.
I don't know that there's a whole lot of people looking for it.
No. Well, I think there's a game. There might be a video, like an older video game. That's the only thing that comes up. But I think we lucked out there because it was like, I don't know.
Well, you misspell a word, chances are you're going to be able to find that account.
Right. I was talking to my buddy last night. We were talking about The Fly because we've been watching a lot of movies, like the movie The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Oh,
and,
God,
He was like, he brought up Brundlefly. And then he's like, there's got to be a band named Brundlefly.
Yeah.
And I searched on Spotify. There's a band called Brundlefly. Of course. Oh. It was like a jazz band. Oh. It was pretty fun. Not what I expected.
Well, that was... I had a band on recently, Four Stroke Baron. And they're a really cool band. If you like Devin Townsend and you like Tears for Fears...
I love both of those things.
Okay, check out Four Stroke Baron because they're amazing. And it's basically Devin Townsend's music with Roland Orzabal singing. It's incredible. But I asked him, said, how did you guys come up with Four Stroke Baron? And they said, well, mixture of two things. We were trying to come up with a name that sounded like a Judas Priest lyric, and everything else that we tried was taken. So I was like, okay.
Man, I love this band already. My love for like 80s and like early 70s hair and like, you know, metal type stuff like that. I just love it. Judas Priest. And
I can tell, I can hear a little bit of it in the music with the psycho drums, a little bit of the compressed distortion and the pinch harmonics.
A lot of the vocals though are like Def Leppard.
Oh yeah.
Rip-offs. I try to get that layering. They just do it so well, and I don't really know how they did it back then, especially back then.
Yeah.
Seeing them at Exit 111 was life-changing.
Like really?
They're one of those bands that, like, I think everyone doesn't realize actually how much I like them.
Really?
Like, I'm like, I love Def Leppard. And they're like, yeah, that's cool. It's like, yeah, that's cool.
No.
I knew, like, even I tricked myself. Like, I went into that show, and where I'm standing there and I'm like, they're going to play a song I don't know soon. 2.5 hours later, I knew every goddamn song and most of the lyrics. And funny story about that. I'm hanging around. Casey and I are the only ones that stuck around to watch Def Leppard. The other guys are in the van sleeping because it's too cold.
Right.
Bunch of losers. I'm throwing them right under the bus. So we're hanging out there and who's next to us is like Brent Hines. Right next to us.
Oh, wow.
So he just played, and he's just dancing around, singing the lyrics, and then the song Hysteria comes on, and then it gets to the chorus, and he just locks eyes with me. And we're singing the chorus of Hysteria to each other. And it was just one of those moments that, like, I don't know why it happened. But every time the chorus came back, no matter where he was, he found me and stared at me.
Oh, my God.
Pointed at me and sang to me. And it was like he had no idea who I was. He definitely didn't know who I was. Like, I'm just throwing that out there. He definitely didn't know who I was. I knew who he was. But then at the end, we talked and a little of that. And
now he knows.
And now he probably still doesn't know. Yeah, you know, we were the first band on today. Yeah. You know, the first band on the smallest stage. That was us.
Oh, yeah, but,
yeah. But anyways, like that's one of the cool, there's one of the cool stories that I got from the festival.
That's the kind of stuff I love hearing.
Yeah, I don't know. That stuff's fun. I love that stuff. And I have one other quick one with that.
Yeah, yeah.
So Nick Raslinix, one of the all-time greatest rock producers. He's done Alice in Chains, Mastodon, everything.
Rush, Vapor Trails.
Yes. Unbelievable producer.
Yeah.
So I'm watching Ghost. I'm just hanging out there, and there's Nick Raslinix alone, just like in the group, just singing his goddamn heart out. And I loved it. Like, it was just such an awesome, like, he was just fist pumping to Ghost and just going for it. That's and awesome. It was like such an awesome, genuine experience watching this dude just love the music. You know, he's worked with Ghost. He did a Ghost album and I think an EP, but it was just so cool. Like, I was like, I idolize this guy, and he's doing what I'm doing. He's just a Ghost fan, you know, right now. And I loved that. And it's really humbling and just like, that's so fucking cool. Like, we're all just music fans. Even no matter what you've done in the end, it's like, we're all just fans of music.
Yep. And that's one of the things I love about doing this show is connecting with people like you who are just big fans and willing to talk about it and tell me your favorite stories. Tell me who you're into. It's, you know, doesn't matter who it is. I love Tears for Fears. I love Van Halen. I love Def Leppard. You know.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure.
No. None. Fallen Oates.
No, it's all great. You're talking. You're preaching to the choir here.
Awesome.
I love all that stuff. And earlier today, I was just listening to Rotting Christ and Deicide and Cryptopsy. And you know, yesterday I was watching videos of Tears for Fears and Talking Heads. And you know, it's whatever you want. Like, there's no guilty pleasures. I hate that word.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
definitely. It's just, I do, like, too.
Yeah. You shouldn't hang out with the people.
I use it, but I don't believe it. That makes any sense.
No, I'm with you. You kind of have to,
to get your point across. You kind of have to sometimes,
especially, well, it's like, it's your audience, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You can't go to anyone, you know, you don't want to go up to a guy with, like, you know, full corpse paint and just be like, dude, that Taylor Swift record, right?
You know, it's he'll either
love it or, like, he's not going to be into it.
No. You are trouble.
Yep.
I could go back and forth with you on bands all night, man. This has been a blast.
I know. No, thank you. No, I've had a good time. Like I said, I haven't had anyone to talk to. My wife runs away every time I put on these Talking Head videos. I'm like, Mei-Ling, just one more David Byrne video.
Yeah. Well, man, I will connect with you on Instagram. You can chat me up anytime you want. I'm always up for it.
I'm on Instagram, Brett Strenoid, and everyone else is pretty much a variation of that. Dan Strenoid and Matt Strenoid, and Casey's Casey Howard.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, he was too cool to be a part of the Asteroid Club.
But you know what's scary? You know who else did that? The Heaven's Gate.
The what?
The Hale-Bopp Comet people.
Yeah.
They did that with their names too. Not the Noid part, but they all had a little nickname that they gave each other, that they gave themselves, and they would end it up with Odie. Like, and I was just listening to a documentary about it, and this is the...
Wait, what? Was this a podcast or was it a...
Yeah, I'm not going to... I may edit this part out, but if you listen to the last podcast on the left... The guy,
I listened to that one. Okay. Yeah. They just redid Heaven's Gate.
Yeah, so...
Didn't finish it yet.
If you... I don't remember. They did like a four-parter on Heaven's Gate or something. So on one of the early parts, they talk about how they started giving each other or themselves names. And
Bo Peep.
Yeah. Bo and the followers had names too. And like, if there's one guy that was really tall, and they, you know, there was like, at that time, there were only like 20 people. So the one dude who was really tall, his name was Tall Odie. And then somebody else was, I don't know, funny. So they call him Funny Odie. And so everything ended in I think it was ODI or something like that. But
that's weird. I got to finish that.
Yeah.
I kind of stopped listening to that podcast because it's a little dark.
It does.
Where we're at.
It does right get now.
Dark. I'm sticking to my PlayStation podcast. That's okay. They can talk about video games. And
now you've got a new one you can listen to with this one.
Oh, yeah. No, it's good.
So,
well, on that note.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.